Everybody's, what's it called? Lean On Me. That's it. Some very, very dodgy backing vocals going on in there. Let's see what Claire has written about my guest. When I say from coffee to Buffy... Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. When I say from coffee to Buffy, you probably can almost immediately identify my guest today. He became a familiar, rather quizzical face on both sides of the Atlantic in the long-running... Yes, you have. In the long-running Gold Blend ads, which ran for nearly 10 years in the 80s, and has done very little since. No! Then he made his fame again in Buffy the Vampire Slayer a decade later. Now he is Merlin, which is back on Saturday nights on BBC One, in which he plays Uther Pendragon. And he's here to chat to me now. How are you, Mr.
Do you know, I'm
Tony
very,
Head?
Very well.
You look good, mate.
I'm good.
You do
I'm
look good.
And we're into another series, which in this day and age is a good thing.
Well, I'm hand on heart, I'm a big fan of it.
I'm very, very pleased about that.
Well, I like fantasy. I like, and it's got a nice sense of humour. They've spent some money on the special effects.
They have a bit of wood.
And I really enjoy it.
And it has to be said, the new series is even fuller.
So tell me about it.
It's crammed with it's just, it's bigger and better, as they say. And I mean, I'm not quite sure how, because the budget didn't go up. But
it did, just yours didn't. that old 25% pay cut.
I wondered why everybody else was having such a good time. No, and it's just, you know, the scripts are fuller and just that much more full on, and it's it does mean that the scheduling is, you know, that in terms of sort of the days, certainly for the boys, Bradley and Colin are both working all hours. Bless them, but they're young; they can
exactly.
But I must admit, I'm in more than I was last year, there's some nice acting bits, some bits to actually get your teeth into.
And who do they get to do that bit?
They bring someone else. can we get something?
Get the stunt double in for the acting-y bit.
Yeah.
It's very, very accurate, isn't it, in its portrayal of the Arthur legend?
Well, yes, but
it's an interesting concept, isn't it? These are great characters.
It was a legend. We did have a few sort of... We had a few... Not malcontents, but people who were sort of die-hard Arthurian legend fans who said, you know, what are you doing? You can't mess about with the legend. It's a story. It's a legend. And it's, you know, there are various myths that it's based on. But, I mean, you know, I mean, Arthur is reported anywhere between Arthur of the Britons through the Lost Legionnaire through, you know, I mean, there's so many convoluted ways that the tales have appeared through history, that I think it was a very clever idea to take the Smallville model and say, okay, what if they'd been young, you know, young guys?
Smallville being the story of Superman growing
Superman
up.
And Lex Luthor.
You see, I know all of these.
Yes.
And you play Uther Bendragon, the father of Arthur.
Yes, who was reputedly, in history, was reputed to be just nothing but a drunkard.
There's loads.
Who died?
Of, you know.
No, yes, yes. but the way we play him in this is that basically he's a warrior king who is trying to hold on with a very tenuous grip to this sort of feudal system, this countryside, this country that is beset by sort of marauding brigands and there are kings all over the place who want a piece of Camelot, and they, you know,
and to teach his son how to be ready.
He is an old-fashioned parent, as they say, so he sort of rules with the rod, and so consequently he's a protagonist. He's actually an antagonist. He basically keeps messing things up and constantly setting himself at odds with magic in a land and a time when magic was sort of rife and, well, purportedly. And it's a nice way of sort of getting a slice of the sword and sorcery and a bit of medieval romanticism and a bit, you know, it's one of those shows that when you're making it and when you're watching it, you think, why the hell didn't anybody do this before? It's perfect.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Absolutely.
Television.
No, and I genuinely am a fan of it. You've got a great young cast in there, too.
Yeah, they're fabulous. They're really, really good. I mean, Jill Trevelyan, who was the casting director, along with Julie Gardner and James Hawes and Julian Murphy and Johnny... I could go on.
Please don't. Camps.
Okay, but I mean, the bottom line is they put together a really good team, and it's a beautiful production. Basically, the unit is exceptional, and the kids, I call them kids, but they're actually not kids, but Bradley's my son. We behave like father and son off set as well. He does things and I berate him and
it's interesting because I've known you a while and you're the most lacking in seriousness person. I mean, you really,
really?
Are. You
really? Really?
But you get these parts where you are a really stern, quite scary.
Oh, you should talk to my children.
Kind of.
My girls, they think, oh, that stern face.
He's a nasty piece of
work. Has to be said, they don't pay any attention to me. It's Sarah, my partner, who's the one that she just... on the phone last night, Daisy was moaning about something and Sarah called her back and just said a couple of words and Daisy said, yep, okay, I'll do that.
do you never think of sitting them down and going, look, this is what I'll become if you don't behave?
Oh, Uther. Well,
yeah.
It's unlikely. There was one that we were in the car going to school and I jumped in for some reason and they both laughed. And they just both fell about. I said, what? And they said, sorry, can't take you seriously. They know it when I'm acting and when I'm...
They've gone into the business, haven't they?
Yep. Daisy did, basically, when she was about 12, I think she did a beautiful series called Feather Boy, and she did another series called for ITV called Patrick's Planet, and then she went on to do exams. She's going back into it. Emily's now in the In-Betweeners.
Terrific.
She's just about to make a thing called MI High, and she's in a movie that with Noel Fielding. That's they just did a pre-shoot, and then hopefully it's going to be shooting in October. So yeah.
And have you worked with them?
I worked with Emily. We did a show called The Inbetweeners, and she played my daughter, and it was absolutely fabulous. Some actors apparently don't like working with their children; they find it too on the nose. Mm. But it was wonderful because you don't have to act. All the relationship stuff is already done. Yeah, so yeah. We had a couple of sort of quite intense scenes, and it's all there. You don't have to kind of, you know, build
a relationship.
It's all already done. So it was fabulous. We did 6 episodes. Jenny Agutter was my wife and her mother. Oh. And it was fabulous and good fun.
Yeah. I asked you to pick a load of songs. You've got you are steeped in music. You love music.
I do like music.
You've been involved in it a lot.
I love it.
And we'll talk a lot more about that, perhaps after listening to a song. One of the choices, a current band, Elbow. Mm. Brilliant, aren't they?
I love Elbow.
Okay, well, this is the one I thought that would be nice to listen to again. One Day Like This.
Oh, that's fun.
Choice of my guest, Anthony Head.
Great song.
Who appeared in The Invisibles with
his
daughter.
Yes, it was The Invisibles. It wasn't The Inbetweeners.
Are you sure it was that daughter?
Because Emily...
Are you sure it wasn't Daisy?
Emily does The Inbetweeners. I did The Invisibles with her.
Okay. Have we got that sorted?
So many in words.
Yes. Inbetweeners, invisible. It's very simple to do.
It's very, very,
very simple. Yes. We were talking about Merlin. You've had a long career, haven't you? You've been going about it for. It seems to be forever.
I'm older than I look.
No, I wouldn't say that.
No.
Yes, of course, everyone's going to remember the Gold Blend adverts.
Well, not everyone, actually. It's quite,
really?
Yes, it's quite refreshing that actually...
Well, no, not young people.
No, there's a whole generation out there that have no idea what people talk about when they say, but it's...
It became that and Nicole and Papa, those sort of ongoing institutions, what's going to happen.
But that was really annoying. Well, maybe Gold Blend. Yeah,
you said it.
But maybe Gold Blend was annoying, but...
My point exactly.
Yes. But it was,
I have to be honest, I didn't know you. I didn't know you then. But I absolutely was taken in by this. Are they, aren't they, will they, won't they? And
'twas iconic, as they say.
It was. But it didn't sell coffee for Gold Blend.
Oh, it did?
I thought it didn't sell Gold Blend.
No, it did. It sold coffee here, which is why they then sold it. They took it to America. It didn't. It sold coffee in America, but it just didn't sell Taster's Choice, which was what it was called. I was, constantly labelled the U-Ban guy or the Maxwell House guy or any other coffee, as well as Taster's Choice. But, I mean, basically, what was amazing, it sold instant coffee to the Americans, which we never, ever thought we'd be able to do. Because the Americans, they don't need to be told how to drink coffee.
Yeah.
But for some bizarre reason, they went, oh, okay, yes, let's try this. Then they started drinking.
Only not the brand that's being
advertised. But everyone else is as well. But, we achieved whatever we achieved. And also, I think the then head of Nestlé's didn't like the fact that the campaign over there was basically she was an ex-married woman. And there was a whole thing where she had a son and all sorts. And he thought...
Wrong.
Wrong. Wrong.
Absolutely
people
wrong.
Should,
Well, it's the wrong kind of people to drink coffee.
Well, exactly.
quite frankly. On every level,
yes.
And it should have been... Was that a problem, though, doing that? And so your face on screen, great, a huge theatrical career.
It was one of those, yeah. I mean, I had, by that time, I'd already done... I'd done Leeds at the National Theatre, and I thought, oh, I'm on the road. And then this commercial came up. And I tested for the Guinness ad that... what's the German? Rutger Hauer.
Oh, yeah.
Ended up doing. And I came very close to getting it. And so this was on the heels of that. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll do that then. And it was Jerry Green, the copywriter, sat me down and said, be prepared to be a household face. I went, really? He said, yeah, And I didn't take him seriously, but then, But yeah, big, big old profile. Kind of meant that I did a lot of theatre, but less TV, because I was the romantic lead hero thing that
thing you've never wanted to be is typecast in anything, is it?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what I've done over the years, there is a pattern to it, which is the fact that there is no pattern to it. I mean, it's actually, thankfully, an extraordinarily eclectic body of work. There's all sorts of things in there which I'm really proud of, because it takes quite a lot of hard work to try and keep people guessing what I do and who I am.
The big surprise for us over here would have been you going to America and doing this terrific series, Buffy, and this comes over, becomes a hit over here, and suddenly everyone's saying, but that bloke from the Gold Blend's ad is in it. But that really turned your career.
And bless her, it was Sarah, my other half's, she basically, we sat down and said, what are we going to do? We need to try and change things, to broaden people's view of you, sort of just to widen the perspective, and she said, I think you have to go over to the States, and we worked
that's hard.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, we didn't want to move lock, stock and barrel, because I'd have dear friends who'd done that, and it's really hard for them. I mean, and then you put everything into getting a job over there, and then it doesn't work out, and then you all come back again. But in this case, I mean, she sat at home with the two girls, and she was pretty much a single parent. And we'd sort of have some holidays, and I'd come over every time I got six days.
Did you have the job at that time when you went out there, or were you doing the rounds?
I was out there for like 2 or 3 months. I got another gig called VR5, which went for 12-13 eps, and then came back, and then went back out, did a couple of pilots that didn't go, and then got Buffy. The one thing I had in mind was I knew a couple of people who'd gone out there and their shows hadn't aired over here. So when they finally came home, they had to reinvent themselves because no one knew who the hell they were. And consequently, I was hoping that it got, not in my wildest dreams did I expect it to get the international, worldwide success that it had. So it was, you know, it was one of those, I mean, thanks to Sarah, and you know, it was absolutely the right thing to do. And it completely reinvented me, came back, you know, and then was offered Little Britain, which was just like, left the field. Almost. Well, initially, all I got was, it was a pilot where I had three sketches or four sketches. And all I, you know, basically, just if you don't see anything else and you just see those three sketches, you go, okay, well, I get the gag, but I mean, how are you going to maintain this over a series? I'm not sure that, you know. And my agent said, no, I think you should do it. You know, what's to lose? If it's no good, then it won't go. And then if it is good, then it's worth being part of. Yeah. And I met the boys and, you know, it was, they're so lovely and so easy to work with. And then we went in to record, and you know, and then they started playing in some of the other sketches, and it was my jaw hit my chest. I went, oh my, this is going to be huge.
Did you know that?
I felt either it was gonna, you know, people, it would be so off the scale that people just wouldn't be able to cope with it, or it was going to be huge. And I mean, it was literally one of the, there was going to be no grey area in between, and it was. I knew it was a huge success. It was first aired on BBC Three, and I was doing a show at the Savoy. I was doing Pirates of Penzance and Peter Pan. And a bunch of the guys in the cast had got BBC Three, and they were all coming in doing the catchphrases already.
Straight away. Yeah.
And they were all, and they were so full of it, and saying, oh, my God, you've done this incredible show. And I thought, oh, no, okay, that'll be a hit then.
Yeah, yeah.
It was brilliant.
The thing with you is you actually are very brave in what you do. Coming to see the live show, The Little Britain, on tour.
Yes.
And so there you are in there with that. And you expect David to be brave. But you, like, you were right out there. David Williams, you expect, and Matt to do things. But you hold your own with the best of them.
A couple of moments when, you know, I mean, the moment that my children will never forget, which, and actually Sarah as well, the posing pouch moment with the feather duster.
Yeah.
I do remember actually saying to the boys, could we do some other, you know, maybe a gay icon thing, maybe we could do sort of you know,
no.
Village People, and the producer at the time, Posner, said have you got a problem with doing this sketch? I said no. He said, well, we'll be doing it then. And you know,
scarred me for life.
Think of my children.
The next choice that you've come up with, now this is, I've not heard, now we're both big Joni Mitchell fans, you chose A Case of You, but you had the Prince version down there as an option. I haven't heard this until today. It's fantastic.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It's fantastic. Listen to this. This is Prince and Joni Mitchell's A Case of You.
Lines. In my bloodline, could drink a case of you, darling. Oh, yeah, and I'd still be on my feet. I'd still be on my feet.
Yeah, it's annoying now.
That, yes, that end bit. I wish he hadn't done that end bit.
Yeah. It was going great. It was all doing very, very well, and then he went off on
one. Yes.
But it's a terrific song.
It's incredible
it?
Song.
Now, I was saying that you're involved with music. We heard you doing backing vocals for Redbox, which I understand you were actually paid.
Yes, at that point I was doing, for some strange reason, I was doing a lot of backing vocals. I'd done some for my brother, I'd done a bunch of stuff for various friends, and all of a sudden I got this call through. I think it might have been the producer, I can't remember who it was, who said, oh, you know, get Tony Head in. And so basically, I was just one of the crowd in there.
Was there any rivalry between you and Murray?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of natural. It's you know, siblings, as it were. But I've kind of gone my main course, really.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I think
you don't. What's he up to now?
He's at the moment. He's just come back from a Canadian tour. He's going. No, in fact, now he's out on a French tour. He's come up with a really nice idea. I haven't seen it yet, but he's come up with a really nice touring thing. He says the band
it's music rather than acting with him.
He still comes back. He does, you know, he still does stuff. I can't remember the last thing he did, but, you know, he does bits and pieces, Judge John Deed and Casualty and all sorts of bits and pieces. So, but I think, you know, music is his love. Mm. And
it's interesting that you both played the same part, like in Chess.
Yeah.
You both... which is a great show.
He didn't do Frankenfurter, though.
Did he not?
No.
I did. Do you remember that? We had a great...
I know you did. Yeah, it was great.
You got the hump because the makeup lady was spending all the time with me and you having to do your
own... I did my own makeup, love it. It's like when I turned...
Which was lucky because I looked like Pauline Prescott.
And that's a problem, why?
Because it was crossed with Imelda Marcos. It was a strange look they gave me for that. I mean, you were terrific in that. I mean, but that was a part. If ever there was a part made for you, which is funny and sexy and subversive.
I did take to it like a duck to water. I must admit, I loved it. And it, you know, it's one of those parts that you just. Somebody asked me this morning if I'd like to do it again. It's like, no, you kind of have to draw a line. I'd love to do it, but I do really do believe I am a little too old for it.
Really?
Yes. I do. Yes, I think.
No, the surgery's really working. Yeah, it's a little tight. But
no, I will listen to my family on this. My family would say, no.
What is it, do you think, about dressing up in women's clothes? Because I've, you know, just been doing hairspray.
You have been.
And there is something... really fabulous about doing it, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, the thing I loved about Frankenfurter was just because he was subversive. He was just a naughty little demon, and he was just, you know, basically he would do anything for sex, basically.
Many things coming at
me. But I did change it up a little bit. I mean, since I had to play it with a wig. Because it didn't look right with short hair, I thought, you know, it's more interesting if it's his wig and he takes it off every night, but he doesn't dress it or anything. So there's things growing in it, and it's sort of a bit, you know, and the makeup, he doesn't bother to take off. I discovered this great makeup base called Elephant Grey, which just looks tired. It's great. And there was a sort of a shabbiness that I wanted him to be different from everything. I'd seen a lot of Tim Curry copies, and I kind of wanted to divert just do something different. But I think now I think it would just be a bit sad, sort of, you know. I wouldn't be I was fairly athletic at that point. I was sort of...
Yeah, you hit an age, don't you? You just wanted to lie down a lot. Really? It's true, yeah. I mean, the best gig would probably be The Body in an Agatha Christie.
Actually, oh, that must be so... Have you heard those things about the guys that, you know, some poor... guy who's the, you know, the stage manager, and he gets to be the body, and then he falls asleep and wakes up just in the middle of the stage.
be a shocker. No, I could have. I've had to do shows where in Les Mis there's a bit where Marius curls up asleep at the feet and Valjean sings, you know, the prayer God on, which is inspirational the first couple of hundred times. But after that, it's like, oh, here we go again. And you nod off. You genuinely nod off. Oh, here we go again. That's a terrible thing to say, isn't it? I shouldn't say that. But it's very rarely happens.
No, absolutely.
Absolutely. I did as well. In the can in Hairspray. It's a 25 minutes that you're waiting in. I don't know if you've seen the show. You win 25 minutes for your entrance. So I had my Nintendo Wii in there playing, not Wii, but the Nintendo DS. And then suddenly you realise, oh, no, I'm doing this puzzle and it's coming up to my queue and you forget. Throw it and come out and forget what you're actually meant to be doing. And then go, ha-ha!
I spend my days like that. What was I doing? Oh, yes, that's what... Yeah.
Do you still have a hankering for the stage? Because most of the work that you do is...
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm hoping. I'm looking at some scripts now. I'm hoping to do some theatre next year, maybe at the beginning of the year. It's definitely... I wouldn't want to turn my back on it. I love live theatre. The thing that's been great about my career is the fact that I've been able to, somehow I've been allowed to go from musical to film to TV to stage to, I mean, you know, well, musical is stage, but I mean, it's been, as I say, I've been allowed to be very eclectic.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's like, okay, we'll take a rest from that at the minute. We'll do this. We'll do, you know, and you kind of have to be really hands-on.
And terrific to make that transition into leading man and character acting as well.
Buffy gave me that. Yeah. That was, I actually looked at the part, I thought, this is my chance to be a character actor, because up to that point I'd been, you know, young leading romantic. Mm. And it was, I embraced it with both hands and you know, it actually allowed me, and from there on in it's been sort of...
And you do give terrific baddie. Well, you do. No, much. You really, really do. The episode of Doctor Who. I'm being nice to you now. This is wrong. The Doctor Who episode of you as the teacher.
Oh, that was fun.
Terrific. There was a great scene. I still can't remember it now. Of you on one side of the swimming pool. Yeah. That's right. And him on the other.
He was great. It was so good to spar with him. It was great fun. We both took to it. We loved it. It was great fun. Great fun. There were some really nice scenes in that, sort of basically almost tempting the Doctor to join me. It was great fun.
Yeah, no, it's terrific. Fun. Tony, it's an absolute joy.
A joy.
Thank
to
you
be
very
here.
Much for coming in and sharing with us in such a loving and liberating way.
I feel liberated.
Do you? Yeah, you look it, actually. In that. Maybe a little bit less liberation on that front. The final choice, Little Feet.
Yeah.
And Dixie Chicken.
Yeah.
What draws you to them?
One of the first bands that my brother turned me on to, actually. Lowell George was a genius. And I love the New Orleans kind of funky... It's New Orleans soul. It's bizarre.
Yeah,
and it's,
yeah.
You know, and it was just... It was the most... It wasn't like anything else that I heard at the time. It came out at the back of the 70s and I heard it sort of the back end of the 70s and it was just... Great, great stuff.
Yes, different. It is a particularly funky one. Dixie Chicken. Mate, lovely to have you in here. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
All the power. And don't forget Merlin, which is on BBC One, a terrific series. Thanks.
Thank you.